the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Just a few weeks ago, we had a fascinating discussion about why young adults are delaying marriage. That's an issue that now has the attention of everyone from demographers and the U.S. Census Bureau to parents and pastors and, well, administrators and colleges and universities, people trying to sell things to parents and others as they're trying to figure out, marketers are trying to figure out, where exactly is adulthood coming and when are people going to start practicing adult behaviors and buying adult stuff and settling down and all the rest? Mark Regner at the University of Texas has written a fascinating article at Christianity Today, and he's making a really good point, and that is that even as you look at the statistics and recognize how much delay is now being built in to the marriage question on the part of many young adults, it's really a part of the larger context of subverting marriage. And it's perhaps more an effect than a cause of the marital crisis in America. Now, as you listen to this program, you'll know, I come back to this again and again because I'm not just concerned about the demographics. I'm not just concerned about the economics. I'm certainly not just concerned about the educational aspects of this. I'm very concerned about the lives of young people, especially Christian young people, who are delaying marriage, but as Mark Regner points out, by their own reporting, they're not delaying sex. And we're finding an awful lot of pain, an awful lot of immorality, an awful lot of temptation, an awful lot of frustration, an awful lot of delayed maturity and delayed adulthood going on in this generation. There's an imbalance here, however, and that imbalance was brought to my attention, and that's why we're having the discussion today. That imbalance has to do with the fact that there are a good number of young adults, in particular young women, who do want to get married. Their aspiration is to be married. They're aiming themselves for marriage, but they're facing a generation of young men who seem not to be playing off of the same card. They're not following the same plan. And that's why on this program, we do come back repeatedly to the issue of male responsibility and male leadership and the fact that a fundamental failure in this regard is, it's showing up in ways other than the marital rates. It's showing up also in other areas of immaturity. This is a generation of greatness. The young adults right now, these young people in their late teens and 20s, they have, especially Christian young people, an amazing capacity to sacrifice for the gospel, to do incredible things for Christ. They have great aspirations, many of them, to reach persons with the gospel, to work within their communities, to help to build up those communities, to address many of the moral evils they see. Some of them, however, seem not to be connecting the dots about how marriage plays into that, not only in the making of a civilization, but into the making of a man, the making of a woman, the making of adults. We need some help figuring this out, and I knew where I wanted to turn. We're going to be welcoming to this program in just a few minutes Lisa Anderson and Steve Waters of Boundless.org. That's a ministry of Focus on the Family, directed primarily to 20-somethings, and they're doing great work. I have to tell you, every time I look at that Boundless site, that's Boundless.org, I'm impressed with the quality of the questions they're asking, the quality of the advice they're offering. For instance, just on this marriage question, they have two books. There is A Young Man's Guide to Marrying Well, A Young Woman's Guide to Marrying Well. You know, here's a pattern we note from time to time. In this generation, we have to offer explicit advice on issues that previous generations took for granted. Why? Because the marriage culture was far more intact in previous generations. You didn't have to say to a young man, this is what you do to get married. He figured it out. It was happening all around him. He was raised with that expectation. His peers had the same expectation. It's a very different picture now. So both for young men and young women, there is good advice, good counsel coming from Boundless.org, and I hope coming from this program today, as to how you can prepare for marriage. And I'm looking forward to having Lisa Anderson and Steve Waters of Boundless.org as my guest. It's going to be a good conversation. And you're going to hear some things that may surprise you. You're going to hear some things that may challenge you. And I think you're going to hear some things that will encourage you as well. First, to review some other issues in the news, I was somewhat surprised to see in the pages of Business Week an article on the baby bump. It says this, a birth dearth is bad for business in the industrialized world. It means fewer young consumers and a shortage of workers whose taxes help support pensioners. So it's good news that total fertility rates, roughly defined as average lifetime births per woman, are recovering a bit in low-birth nations such as Britain, Spain, Japan, and Russia. You look at that and you say, well, we've been talking about this birth dearth for a long time. These fertility rates are so low, they're so far beneath the natural replacement rate, that these nations are actually facing a crisis. Well, I looked at the statistics that were cited here, released by the Population Reference Bureau in Washington, D.C., and that uptrend just isn't much of an uptrend. Now, as a matter of fact, the uptrend that is noted is often being incentivized by government. Russia now gives mothers with one child $9,000 for each additional baby. Japan is also offering financial incentives for its people to have babies. Now, I'll tell you, and by the way, Business Week notes that Russians still aren't making enough babies to stop the populace from dipping in the long term. A recent article indicated that the Russian army may collapse because there simply will not be enough young men of the age that traditionally enter the Russian military when the current generation begins to retire. I'm not so concerned about the Russian army. My concern is not, for that matter, about the marketers concerned that they want to have enough little consumers coming along. Now, my concern is human happiness, thriving, and well-being, and the glory of God that is our aspiration to see in creation, and the fact that these folks who are separating adulthood from marriage, as we're going to talk about shortly, are also separating marriage and adulthood from parenting. And children are being seen increasingly as a hobby, as something other than the aspiration. The old model that I believe is deeply rooted in something that's essential for human happiness and the making of adults and the thriving of a civilization and of its individuals has young people aspiring to marriage. Yes, that's the order, marriage first, and then children. But we're facing a generation that is so confused about this that many of them have separated motherhood and marriage altogether, and others are separating marriage and the expectation of parenthood almost altogether. We've been watching some trends in higher education, and here's one that really has my attention. Peter Berkowitz, writing in the Wall Street Journal, is mentioning that academia seems now to be going silent on free speech on many controversial issues. And the one in particular that has his concern is the decision by Yale University Press not to publish the cartoons that caused so much controversy in the Muslim world when the book is about the cartoons that caused so much controversy in the Muslim world. Facing threats from the Muslim world, Yale University Press decided that it would not publish these cartoons because it did not want to offend. Peter Berkowitz and many others are asking the question, what happened to academic freedom? Whenever the professors on these campuses are challenged in their teaching, they immediately go to a defense of academic freedom. When it comes to these academic presses, university presses, and college publishers, when it comes to a challenge for their books for being way out there on the margins of morality or human sexuality, they say, well, that's academic freedom. But now when it comes to their intimidation by Muslims for these cartoons, they hardly issue a peep. And they do not claim academic freedom. It turns out, as Peter Berkowitz writes, academia is under siege and is caving in terms of academic freedom by some who would simply intimidate them from doing something like publishing these cartoons in a book about the cartoons. How in the world is that going to make sense? How is anyone reading that book going to understand the controversy when the cartoons themselves are not published? Then again, if the reader of that book understands the story, maybe it'll become all too clear. Speaking of moral issues, there are parents who for the last few years have had to be considering the moral question of using the vaccine Gardasil when it came to their daughters, Gardasil being recommended by some as approved for use, by the way, in young females since 2006, as a vaccine against genital warts, which eventually also becomes a major contributing factor as a vaccine against cervical cancer. In the state of Texas, there was a short-lived effort to require girls of a certain age to be vaccinated with Gardasil before they could be admitted to the public schools. But even now, it is becoming more and more the practice that these shots, which cost on average about $300, are being given to girls because their parents are deciding it simply is a good idea to get a vaccination against a potentially lethal cancer. Now, as I've mentioned, as a Christian parent, I'm firmly against any kind of regulation that would demand that parents do this. And I'm not at all supportive of a vaccine that would give license to sexual immorality. But I'll tell you, as a parent, I do not want my daughter, for instance, not having premarital sex because she fears a cancer. I want her not to have premarital sex because she fears the judgment of a holy God and because she holds herself to a higher standard because of the calling of God in marriage. Well, now the Wall Street Journal is out, along with other media, to report that the FDA is now expected to approve the use of Gardasil in boys. And so parents, those of you who didn't think you're going to face this question, boy or girl, it's going to be on your plate. We're going to come back for a very interesting conversation with Lisa Anderson and Steve Waters of Boundless.org. We're going to be talking about restoring a marriage culture for young adults and, by extension, to the rest of us as well. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, from time to time, you as listeners give us some really good ideas about what we ought to be talking about. And by your calls to this program and by your letters and email, we get a pretty clear signal. One of those signals came in recent months. We did a program where we were discussing the Mark Regnerus article on the delay of marriage and the case for early marriage, a very important issue, one I've been talking and writing about for a very long time, and I'll tell you, it's good to know that this conversation is spreading. That was the discussion we were having, but it was the discussion we were not having that caught the attention of some people, and, well, they've got my attention. They were asking, what do you say to young adults who really want to get married, but they're really not even sure how to get started in this whole process? You know, we're talking about the recovery of a marriage culture in the midst of a generation that has literally been dumped in history into a period in which marriage is a great big question mark. I've got two excellent guests on the program today, and I'm looking forward to the conversation. Steve Waters is the director of Young Adults for Focus on the Family. He's the author of the book Start Your Family, Inspiration for Having Babies. And he and his wife, Candace, worked together to launch the website Boundless. And listeners of this program know I'm a big booster of that site. Lisa Anderson hosts The Boundless Show, which is focused on the family's popular podcast for young adults. And she leads the Boundless team in discussions on relevant issues, interviews of authors, artists, and other newsmakers. We have both Steve Waters and Lisa Anderson on the program today. Welcome.
Hey, great to be with you.
Great to be here.
I believe in what you guys are doing, and as we were thinking about having this conversation, well, you just came naturally to mind. So let me just throw the question to you. Let me just kind of throw the ball slowly across the plate. This is where you guys live and work and one of your central passions. Why are we in marriage trouble in this generation?
You know, I think a lot of it is because of the gun shyness that came from the chaos of the 70s and 80s when divorces were just blowing up like bombs up and down the block. And now people have this strong desire to marry well that stayed consistent throughout the generations, but very scared about how to do it. And then they look around and there are no paths to get there well. And so they settle for good companionship, friendship, sex, all kinds of benefits of marriage along the way, but still hope someday marriage will land on them somehow, fall in their laps. And they don't necessarily put all the pieces together to see how some of those short-term satisfactions might make it harder to get to where they want to get long-term.
Lisa, what are you thinking?
I think from my perspective, really what I saw growing up even in the church in the 80s is there was no message, there was nothing preached regarding intentionality towards moving towards marriage. The only thing I heard was, you know, if it's the Lord's will, it'll happen. And so I waited for it to happen, and I'm now in my 30s, and I'm still single.
Well, and parents are stressing, get into the right college, get into the right job. We're going to do everything we can to coach you to life success. And then they think that you're going to take care of all the marriage and relationship stuff. Kids aren't getting a lot of coaching in that area.
Well, and all the natural supports of the culture around us, whether it's in the secular culture or even within the church, an awful lot of that's really been confused and removed from the picture. And part of it's just because when we talk about a marriage crisis in this generation, we're talking about something that's really been handed down to them by at least one or two previous generations that really has been rebelling against the very idea of marriage, trying to embrace this ethic of individual autonomy and self-expression, deinstitutionalizing marriage and turning it into just kind of a contract to make or break at will. And so you have a generation of young adults, And the statistics tell us the story. The average age of the first marriage for a white male, now upwards of 27 and a half, arching towards 30 years of age. You're talking about almost a decade of delay of marriage from where we were at least some previous decades early in the 20th century. And then you look at the side of the equation of recovery and you say, you know, good grief. You know, we're looking at a situation here in which the new normal is almost so institutionalized, set in place as a cultural expectation. You've got to be a real rebel to kind of launch out and say, you know, I think marriage is such an important priority for me. I think it's an essential mark of adulthood. I'm aiming for it, just as a sign of the fact I'm going to grow up and do what God's made me to do.
Yeah, it's like the script, the expectation that comes from parents, it comes from educators, even comes from some pastors, has told them, yeah, marriage is good, but it is a down-the-road thing. You need to wait as long as possible, get all these things in place. And they don't realize that they're leaving an optimism of what's going to happen in the future almost through the accumulation of birthdays. And what they're not doing is giving people the aptitude and preparation, the ability to marry well, by giving them a vision for it, by giving them biblical structure for what it looks like to prepare themselves for the job description of Ephesians 5 and to be able to experience the goods that God designed marriage to give them and the glory that he hopes to get out of it.
You know, the situation is that just given the picture we're talking about, our temptation is going to be to do that first show all over again and not get to the purpose of this conversation. So let me bring it back and say, okay, we've kind of laid the landscape now for why we have the problem as it stands. So what are we going to do about it? Now, you know, you guys established the Boundless site. You're doing great work, speaking out to young adults and involving young adults in the conversation. If we're really going to talk to a generation of Christian young adults ready to make a difference, let's start to set a platform. What are you guys saying this generation should do?
Well, we've stressed in our Guy's Guide to Marrying Well and our Girl's Guide to Marrying Well four big ideas that really are proving to be countercultural. One is the idea of intentionality that says this is something you should be just as intentional about as you are about your growth and your relationship with Christ and your education and your career. And it's something that is of great importance in this season of life and not something you wait to come around to later. We also talk about community, that we are such an individualistic focused culture, but we overlook the power of mentors in the church body and engaging with our family, both from a network and an accountability and encouragement side. But we also talk about purity. I mean, Mark Rigneris talks about maybe 80 to 90% of these Christians who are waiting on marriage but not waiting on sex. And there is a power in keeping your sexual focus directed towards marriage that keeps relationships moving along in the direction they should be going. And then finally, we talk about Christian compatibility. For all the different ways people look at combining on personality or birth order or, you know, zodiac or whatever it is, that the most important thing they should be looking for is, are we better together for the gospel than we are apart? And there is so much clarifying when it comes down time to make a good decision about marriage and move beyond these relationships that are going nowhere to get to that place where we say, are we ready to shift from this relationship stage to actually serving God in marriage?
Let me turn to Lisa. Let me ask you, when you counsel with young women, speak to young women, just given your own situation, you know, what would you say that young women in particular should be doing and thinking at this particular stage?
I think this is a place I was in probably about 3 or 4 years ago before I really got involved with Boundless. I had come out of really a feminazi mindset through college and beyond that told me, you know, I need to work on my career. I need to be out there. I need to be moving from place to place and do what's necessary to do that. So I think I had to get over that mindset first and foremost.
When we come back, we're going to talk about these four big ideas that Steve and Lisa have mentioned here about marriage, and we're going to focus especially on the first one, which is intentionality, because frankly, the others all really flow from that. The intentionality to marry, that's a huge issue, and that's what's missing from the lives and aspirations and kind of strategic life visions of an awful lot of young people. Steve has said it well. We really have had an awful lot of people who have put on this generation a very different set of expectations, and it's showing up in their lives. We'll be right back to continue this discussion on the Albert Mueller Program.
Lean
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. In the spirit of journalistic disclosure, I need to disclose I'm a board member of Focus on the Family, and I'm very glad to have two of our team members on the program today. Steve Waters is Director of Young Adults for Focus on the Family, and Lisa Anderson hosts The Boundless Show. Steve and his wife Candace started The Boundless website, and I have to tell you, it's one of the dimensions of the work of Focus on the Family of which I'm most proud. They have put out some periodicals and indeed now book projects on getting ready for marriage. They talk about four big ideas as guides to marrying well from a Christian worldview perspective. And the first of these was intentionality. Steve, I want to come back to you. It seems to me that that is the one thing most missing.
What's surprising for a lot of people to realize is they probably will get married someday. If you look at the census data, 80 to 90% of the population does indeed get married. The thing that people need to realize is how they get married is going to be affected by their intentionality. We've seen studies on cohabitation and other drifting relationships that show that a lot of people back their way into marriage, that it's something that they end up arriving at, but they didn't have a clear path, didn't have an intentional approach to it. And so what we're encouraging is not the kind of intentionality where somebody gets on every dating site they can possibly get on and goes up to perfect strangers and starts proposing, but someone who is serious about it and who realizes that going into it with certain amount of vision and preparation is much better than backing their way into it and just stumbling onto what could be a very bad relationship.
Well, I think we're talking here about the hallmark of a lot of folks in terms of questions far beyond marriage. Let me just speak to the issue of intentionality. I'm surrounded by thousands of young adults. I love them. This generation is filled with such passion and conviction, and I'm really excited about what they're going to do. I also feel, I think, by my relationship with them and the fact that I am surrounded by them, I feel some of the anxieties of this generation and see some of the patterns. I'll tell you, Steve, one of the patterns I see is that there's a lacking intentionality in many areas of life. This is a generation that kind of bounces from one thing to another. And so when I think you're talking about intentionality, I think you really need to stress, and we all do, the fact that we need to have some kind of life plan as Christians in particular. For secular folk, it's going to be harder for them to connect to this. But if we're going to live our life to the glory of God, we really need to have a good deal of intentionality about our vocational choice, about our educational choices, about, of course, family and marriage. And all of those choices, we need more of these young people headed for the mission field, answering the call of the gospel. We need more of them, leaving the expectations of the secular community and following in a costly, sacrificial way of Jesus. All that takes intentionality.
Well, and there's some good, well-intentioned Christians who really feel like being intentional about marriage is going to come in conflict with their relationship with God, that they really feel like it's a either-or. And we want to help people realize that being intentional about determining if you're supposed to serve God in marriage or serve God as a single is one of the most important pursuits of your 20s and 30s, and that it's not a distraction, that in fact God is going to use marriage for most people to conform them into the image of His Son, and that we're not going to get as many opportunities as we do in marriage and family to lay our lives down for another person and to be stretched and shaped and to have that crucible experience. And so for people to realize both the marriage and family itself as well as the pursuit is going to be a part of how God does grow their relationship with Him, and it's not it doesn't have to be a conflict and a distraction.
Steve, just on that issue of distraction, it seems to me that one of the basic theological principles that we need to bring in here is that God's intention is that we receive His gifts in the proportion and for the purpose He's given us. And if He's given us the gift, it can't be a distraction.
That's right. It's for our good and His glory.
Absolutely. Now, let me turn to Lisa for a moment. I want to ask you very particularly on the question of intentionality, Lisa. Are young women in a different position than young men on that score?
I think so, yes, because I think that we have been taught that it's okay to pursue a career and it's okay to pursue a lot of other things, but it's not okay to pursue and to desire marriage. And we need to take that back for women and allow them to say, even though it's easier and less risky, to say, oh, I don't mind if I get married. If it is God's will for you, and it is for most people, for most women, then we need to start encouraging that as a first step.
That's a very countercultural statement. I think one that will catch a lot of attention. I appreciate it, however, because I think it's not only honest, I think it's absolutely right. And a lack of being candid about the issue of marriage, because we just want to protect that kind of zone of personal privacy in this postmodern world. It's leading us into a failure to discuss the issues that in many ways are the central issues of our accountability before our Creator. We'll talk about that when we come right back on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. We are continuing our conversation with Lisa Anderson and Steve Waters, a focus on the family, The Boundless Show, and The Boundless Website. In particular, we're talking about how this generation of young adults can rebuild a marriage culture in the midst of the chaos of this post-marital society. Also, just very personally, how we can encourage young people to develop intentionality toward marriage and then do all that will follow. Their guides to marrying well, written for young men and young women, are really, really important because, quite frankly, well, let me put it bluntly, they shouldn't be necessary, but they profoundly are. And as you go to Focus on the Family's website and to the website of boundless.org, you'll find out how to get that material for yourself. But right now we have Steve and Lisa both on the line. Lisa, let me turn back to you for a moment. When you're speaking to young women, what kind of receptivity do you get when you tell them it's all right to say you want to be married? It's all right to make that a matter of intentionality. It's really all right to make this a major matter of your prayer and the prayer of your friends and brothers and sisters in Christ. And it's okay, to be honest, that this is really a central passion of your heart.
Yeah, I would say the first response I usually get is a blank stare. I don't think most women have been told that message, even in the church. I think we have been told, as we were talking in the earlier segment, that the best thing to pursue is maybe a career as a missionary, or the best thing to pursue is to climb the corporate ladder and represent Jesus Christ in the public square or in a corporate environment. But we're not told that it's okay to get married and to do that young, you know, at a young age, and it's not okay to just have a family and have that be, quote, enough. And so I think that message needs to be spoken much more loudly and clearly for women in our generation, because it's not being heard. And I say, you know, I always tell people I blame my 20s on myself as far as my singleness. I moved every year or two, moving up in my career. I didn't join a local church because I was always on the move. I was very, as Boundless talks against very often, very much in the buddy mentality. I was just friends with all these guys with no definition, probably in very defrauding situations much of the time, spending time with them, giving time and attention with nothing in return. And I think that, you know, brought me into my 30s, and now with a generation of women and men who have kind of just sold out in that sense, and now we're kind of languishing in our singleness and wondering, where do we go from here?
You know, Lisa, one of the factors I think that plays against us here is the fact that so many in the evangelical community in the church have bought into the same wrong arguments. There are a lot of parents who will say this. My daughter, who's 20 years old, was asked by a Christian counselor at a Christian university, was asked, you know, right up front, what do you want to do with your life, when she was looking at which college she would attend. And she responded with marriage as a very high priority. And this counselor simply said, well, you can get to that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly why we are in this situation.
Yeah, it'll just take care of itself.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, let's not talk about that now. There are more important things now.
Right.
You know, make your educational plan, make your vocational plan. Marriage, if it's really all that important, will become important later. And I think that is just insidious. It's subversive. And it's really damaging in the lives of both young men and young women. They're getting that message.
Well, and I think we hear a lot, you know, especially us women here on the Boundless team, Candace and I especially, hear the message of, well, okay, marriage is okay, and obviously the Lord wants people to get married, but make sure that you don't make it an idol. And that's what we always hear, you know, that we're making too much of marriage. We're talking too much about marriage. And yeah. really, it's, you know, I always say, I was actually at Catalyst last weekend manning the Boundless booth. And I probably talked with, you know, 85% of the people I spoke with had never heard of Boundless. And when I said, you know, really here, our message on relationships, unfortunately, is now countercultural. We are saying that if you are not specifically called to singleness, then you should pursue marriage. You should do it biblically. You should do it intentionally and get out of these 10-15-year-long relationships where nothing is happening, where they're completely defrauding, where you're just, you know, dinking around and guys are in their parents' basements and women are running around, you know, taking over roles that aren't really necessary and we're not supposed to be doing. And it's bred all kinds of craziness that's kind of finding itself into different areas of our cultural life.
Lisa, there's one thing you have said that I think is more profound than many people would recognize. When you were speaking of your own 20s and moving around, you mentioned you didn't join a local church. You know, the second point in your guide to marrying well is community.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just in this area of life that young adults are vulnerable because they're not deeply involved in the local church. It's every dimension of life and faithfulness to Christ. But I'll tell you, this is a central one right here. And when people ask me, what can I do? And that's the originating question for our conversation. What can I do? I'll say to a young Christian, you get as deeply involved in the local church and its ministries as you possibly can, and you'll discover that there are all kinds of opportunities you never knew about.
Well, and the local church also has a role here. I've been impressed with Robert Wuthnow and Christian Smith and other researchers about the faith of young believers who say for all the pop theories about why young believers are not engaged in a local church, it's because of where they are in the marriage and parenting path. And for churches that want to grow and want to have young people engaged in their congregation, anything they can do to help people marry well and to start families well will grow. But instead, it seems like they've grasped this thought that, well, we just need better coffee shops and cooler music and grow our hair longer. And they're missing out on what people really need and have a deep desire for, which is them to come alongside their path to marriage and family.
You know, Steve, I just looked at a research report this morning, and it's counterintuitive and profoundly important. It says that when you start looking at generational comparisons, it turns out the generational distinctions aren't as important as the life stage distinctions.
That's right. Life stage trumps
That's
generational
right.
differences.
So if you've got a married 40-year-old couple, they've got a lot more in common with a married 20-something couple than either does with the singles in their own age cohort. So you can.
And that's actually what brings people back to Christ, is those experiences of marriage and family can bring a hippie, a drug addict, all kinds of people back to a different view of God in a way that just the accumulation of years cannot.
And as a theologian, I just got to come back and say, Steve, you know, that's not a sociological phenomenon. The sociologists like Christian Smith, you mentioned Robert Wuthnow, they've done a great job tracking it. I can make say that's theological. That's biblical.
That's
the biblical
right.
worldview is that when we receive the gifts God has given us, including the institution of marriage, and we find our fulfillment in them, we will find the other issues of our lives also coming into alignment. And there's a wholeness there we're never going to find anywhere else.
Amen.
On the program today, I've had the honor of having Lisa Anderson and Steve Waters, both of Focus on the Family, and the website, and I would say cornucopia of all good things, Boundless. It's especially for 20-somethings, but I'll tell you, there is a lot there for those both younger and older as well. Steve, Lisa, thanks so much for joining me on the program today. We'll be right back with final thoughts on the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I received an interesting email the other day. A listener to this program wrote in to say, I wish you wouldn't make such a big deal out of marriage. But I wish you would just kind of let the marriage issue go for a while and talk about something else. And she said, the writer was a woman writing, she said, you know, I'm tired of hearing about marriage because it just doesn't hit me where I am. Well, I'm not in a position to find out what she means by that and exactly where she is, but my guess is that if she was motivated to write that letter, it probably hits her closer to home than we might imagine. But it does raise the question, why must we talk about marriage as much as we do? Well, when you look at any particular moment in history, you could call it a cultural moment, where we are right now in this culture, or where we have been before, where we might be in the future, the crucial question is going to be, where right now are we losing ground where it's making a real and devastating impact in the lives of people we know and love and people far beyond us who are our friends and neighbors we may never meet? You know, I'll tell you, the issue of marriage is very hard to discount when you consider that question. Because the subversion of marriage, the delay of marriage, the failure of a generation to launch into a marriage culture, the undermining of marriage by no-fault divorce and any number of other legal and cultural compromises, these are issues that are leading to a real deficit of human happiness, thriving, and well-being with people all around us. An incredible number of the people listening to my voice right now know very directly the pain of what it means when marriage is undermined. Many of the people who we will pass on the street and perhaps in the hallway at school, the people that we see across the street in our neighborhood, the people at the PTA meeting, the people that we work with, their lives would bear the scars and the direct testimony of what happens when marriage is subverted. We've been in an interesting experiment in this country for the last half century or so. In the aftermath of the tremendous social revolutions that have transformed this culture, everything from feminism to the technological revolution, the mobility that has led people to move from one community to another, disrupting roots and landing in one place for a number of years only to uproot and go to another. These trends have to be seen together, but these trends have helped to undermine marriage in such a way that we understand we now know far more than we may want to know the results of this experiment. The results, by and large, have been devastating. When you undermine a marriage culture, you not only begin to unravel a civilization's DNA, you also bring untold injury into the lives of people young and old, rich and poor. Everywhere where marriage is subverted, the effects are devastating, not only in the short term, but in the medium and long term as well. So rebuilding a marriage culture is about more than just getting marriage right. For Christians, it's about seeing the glory of God in the recovery of one of God's greatest gifts to his human creatures. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.